Blog Talk Radio.
And a happy Sunday to you with those smooth sounds. Oh, folks, that's right. You knew what you were getting.
You were forewarned. That's right. J. King is not in here tonight, but we do have, of course, Jimmy Kent will be joining us. It's the way that I see it on the J. King Network. I'm hosting tonight, of course, your humble host, Reese on the Radio, filling in today, which I promise will be an action-packed show talking about things that matter to you, things that you care about, or so I think. Folks, J. King had an interesting title for today's show. The title is, Are We Too Much Black and Not Enough American? Now, the concept of this, if I may speak for J. King, the concept of this question is important. Is that are we paying too much attention to our ethnicity instead of our commonality or common bond as Americans? So are we playing into the black culture as opposed to the American culture? Is there a subculture of being African-American or black, for that matter, that's outside of the scope of being American? Are we American? And that, to me, is a very, very important question. So I looked this little ditty up when I was a kid. And I'm not that old. I'm kind of a younger guy than most of my compadres here on the J. King Network. They're probably about 10 years older than me. And they remember a simpler time when we were in the classroom learning about what it was to be American, the importance of being American. And I pulled up this little ditty that reminded me of what it was like when I was a kid. And being American was important. In a sense, I don't want to use the word shoved down our throats, but it was in our faces every day. And I found this, and it brought me back to a simpler time. You'll remember.
We the people, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare at hand, secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, to ordain and establish this constitution.
Now, you remember that, don't you? Schoolhouse Rock taught us how a bill was made, how an amendment is passed. You remember all of that, don't you? That's a big part of growing up, at least when I was a kid. It was a huge part of growing up. To me, when I grew up, that's what I had to learn. Yes, we had our little Black History Month thing, and that, you know, that was, you know, sort of brought about, I think, by a school district that said, hey, look, we got a lot of African Americans here. It's important that we teach them about their history. We went over that over and over again, I remember, in school. It was always about the same subjects, though. Always learned about Dr. Martin Luther King. Always learned about why am I forgetting his name now? George Washington Carver. We always learned about the peanut. About how he found thousands of ways you can use the peanut. We always learned about Harriet Tubman. We always learned about Benjamin Banneker. These things were staples. There were other people that they did not teach in school. When I had a child and had children, and they were learning about certain people in Black history, they were learning about that. They started to broaden it a little bit. You know, they started to talk about. I want to say that they were learning more about Malcolm X, but that was more in high school. But they learned a little bit more about other people in public school. So, yeah, it was important. It was relevant. But I remember there was a simpler time when they wanted to teach everyone how to be American. How this was a great melting pot. But we all had one fundamental thing going on and pouring through our veins. Is that were we unique from any other place in the world? How being American was a privilege. How lucky we were. Thank God you ain't one of those starving kids in Africa. Ethiopia, that was a big deal. Remember that? You don't want to be one of those kids. So we embraced our Americanism. But nowadays, things are so dismissive and so divisive today that the only thing people want to talk about, at least when I hear it, they want to talk about their uniqueness as far as their ethnicity. Now, look, I know what a lot of people are going to say. Why can't we care about our blackness, Reese? Jews care about their Jewness, I guess. I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but you know what I mean. Chinese people celebrate their culture. They bring their New Year here. Go to San Francisco during the Chinese New Year. You wouldn't recognize this country. Go to an Italian, San Gennaro's feast in New York every year. That place is uniquely Italian. So the question is always asked, how can you possibly be American in a country that doesn't celebrate being American? I don't think anybody celebrates being American anymore. But here's what it is that I have found out. Most of you hate this country. Oh, you may think that's a harsh term. Oh, Reese, we don't hate it. Yes, you do. You hate this country. You're not happy with it. There's more than stuff that you just don't like about it. You hate this country. And I know you do. You can't set aside any of the atrocities that have ever taken place in this country. That's why you don't like it. But you wouldn't live anywhere else. You wouldn't live anywhere else than here. But you show your disgust for it every day. I see it within the Black community. I see it within the Latino community. Puerto Ricans don't want to stay in Puerto Rico, but they love being here. Tell them to go back to Puerto Rico, they go nuts. They love it here. But talk about it. I mean, it's almost disrespectful for you to live in a country that you hate. Isn't it? In my mind. Because this is the only place where you can get away with that. You can't be in China and disrespect its government. Here you can do it all day. That should be the one unique thing that you love about this country. But most people are attributing that to being Black, to slavery, the biggest atrocity ever committed on this soil. I agree with you. I'm even suggesting that you don't get over it. But it was the process of America. The process of America that got us to where we are today, where our Constitution, being the most important thing in our lives, not only protects us, but keeps us free. The thing that we should celebrate each and every day as Americans. So we're asking the question today, are we too much Black and not enough American? And if it's true, is it okay? I don't think there's a real problem with it, but is it okay? And how can we be more American? Do we want to be more American? It's an even better question. Can we be more American? Or just say, forget about it. We'll be back. You know the number here, folks. The number's 347-205-9366. On this Sunday, March the 10th, 2013. And don't forget, your friend, and definitely mine, is in the house today. She's going to be joining us today. I know you want to hear from her. She's got her own personal take about this. You know who she is.
Mary, Mary, why you bugging?
me and you come over. We do it like the cha-cha.
Reason on the radio, we are back. The way I see it, the J. King Network, Jimmy Kent, J. King, not here. I think Jimmy Kent's joining in a little bit. I didn't get any word that he wasn't, but hopefully he will be. Anyway, we're talking about, are we too much black and not enough American? And Beasley brought up a great question. He says, how does one be more American? So do we hang the flag outside of our house, have a big 4th of July party? And even though that might seem like he's being in somewhat, almost facetious in nature, I don't think he is. Because I responded to him by saying, protect the rights of each of us, stand up to those who try to dismantle the Constitution. He says, how? Well, that's simple. You vote against anyone who tries to dismantle the Constitution. Now, something ran through my mind about all of this. You know, as J. King and I were talking about it for the past couple of days, talking about this subject, something ran through my mind, folks. And there were two times in one's life, or at least that I've seen, when people start talking about the Constitution, the contract between the people and its government, which says, look, it first, do no harm. You do no harm to us. You will not be a totalitarian against us. I have rights as an individual. There are only two times in my life that I've seen where people have fought or even brought up the Constitution. And that is when they've been wronged, civilly or legally, whatever, you know, it might be. Someone does something to your property or, you know, someone does something to you personally to harm you. People immediately start looking at the law. And especially when they're arrested. Oh, there are a whole lot of jailhouse lawyers. I remember my lawyer used to say that to me all the time. Don't listen to the jailhouse lawyers. They'll get you in trouble all the time. But it's true. You look at the guys who were in jail, they're all looking at the Constitution, all reading it, knowing it. It's amazing to me. Now, I don't want to call them criminals because I don't know. They're not guilty of anything until they've been convicted. But that's when they are looking at that Constitution literally with a fine-tooth comb. They want to know everything it is about their personal rights. But if you see them before this tragedy has happened to them, none of them seem to care. If you talk to any one of them, they'll tell you over and over and over again, we ain't got no rights. We ain't got no rights. We ain't got no rights. Our vote don't count. We don't count. But then when they get into a jam, then it goes right into that Constitution to find out exactly what rights they have. And then they start preaching to you about what rights you have. Then everybody knows. Everybody's an advisor. So the question is when is it that people decide that they want to be American? It can't always be when you're in trouble. It can't be unique to this one situation. When are you going to join the mainstream? We have too many people who constantly remind us of how black we are. You know who they are. Hey, look, here's Chris Rock. Here's Chris Rock talking.
I see some black people looking at me. Man, it ain't us, it's the media. It ain't us, it's the media. The media has distorted our image to make us look bad. Why must you come down on us like that, brother? It ain't us, it's the media. Please cut the fucking dish, okay? 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 When I go to the money machine tonight, all right? I ain't looking over my back for the media. I'm looking for niggas, bitch. Ted Koppel ain't never took this from me. Niggas have. So you think I got three guns in my house because the media outside? Oh, it's Mike Wallace. Run!
Hyperbole, yes. But the bottom line is that when you're talking about being an individual, which for some odd reason people seem to think that they're only individuals when it means something to them, they're all uniquely black any other time. We're black. We do things a black way. We behave a certain way. This is a black thing. Well, what's an American thing? Well, there are plenty of ways, folks. There are plenty of ways for you to be American. And those things are your individual rights as a human being. Your prosperity. That's what America is about. Isn't that important to you? People keep asking the question, what does it mean to be American? You don't know? Do you not know what it is to be American? Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's not a white thing. That's not a black thing. That's not a Jewish thing. That's not an Asian thing. That's not a Latin thing. That is an American thing. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That would get laughed at in any other country. Laughed at. Try to promote life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in Russia. Try it. You can't get it done. Let's see what Beasley's talking about here. When so many elected officials continue legislation like the Patriot Act, which is a direct conflict with the Constitution, no one even talks about the Patriot Act or the NDAA. At the NDAA, Beasley says Chris Rock is running. Edwin in Connecticut, thank you for chiming in, says, Chris Rock used to be great. Nowadays, he is he's starting to sound more like Pookie, the crackhead, with all the dumb things coming out of his mouth. It's absolutely right. Here it is, Chris Rock, one point talking about, you think I got guns in my house because the media is outside. But now he's telling everyone to listen to his father, Barack Obama. Yeah, that's what he said. Listen to your father. Barack Obama is the father. Michelle Obama is our mother. And we listen to our parents. So get rid of guns. The constitutional right to bear arms. And why? Being American means that you should have the right to bear arms. That's being American. That's right. That's being American. How can you be American? You protect the rights of others, and you fight against anyone who tries to diminish them, who tries to destroy them, take your rights away. Yeah, of course comedians should leave politics alone, Brown Beasley, of course. But who puts them out on the national stage? Who puts them out there? This president does. Mayor Mike Bloomberg, how many actors and actresses and singers does he have on his Demand a Plan campaign telling people to bring in their guns, stop guns, get the guns off the street? We need more gun control. Who's doing that? Who's putting those people out there? Because you like Chris Rock, or you like Beyonce, or you like Charlize Theron. You're going to put the gun. I'm not going to buy a gun. Chris Rock says they're wrong. The right to protect yourself. Michael Dukakis. This is my favorite story, folks. And Edward, forgive me because you've heard this story a million times. I can't stop bringing it up, especially when I have to deal with this audience. Michael Dukakis, governor of Massachusetts, said that if someone was to break into your home, that you should leave, not defend it. Leave. Leave the home, call the cops, let them deal with it. Cops get there enough time to arrest the guy, so be it. Good graces. But if they don't get in there enough time, at least you're safe. Let them take your stuff. That came directly from a governor. A man smarter than you, folks. He's smarter than you. He's so smart, he let Willie Horton out of prison on a furlough. That's what being American is about, folks. You fight for your rights. You ensure that they are protected by your elected officials. If they do not, you get rid of them. I knew the Willie Horton issue was coming, Reese. You're becoming predictable. You might be right there, Delia, but come on. Come on. We're talking about Michael Dukakis. They allowed this guy to be the governor of Massachusetts. Most people said that was a good thing for him to do. That was a good thing for him to do.
Wait, let people out of prison on a furlough? Oh, man, he's real lenient on crime.
Liberals thought he was a god. Even made him the Democratic nominee for president. Must have been a good thing. Wasn't it a good thing, folks? That's not being American. That is not being American. And what is so unique in the black culture? What is it to me? Somebody explain it to me. How the importance of being too much black as opposed to being more American. Tell me where the benefits are. Aside from the simple things, you know, having black pride. It gets you nowhere, by the way. Aside from that, tell me what it is that's unique to being black as opposed to being American. You see, if I look at myself as an American, I look at myself as a person with opportunities. As American, I stand up to those values. I see myself prospering as an American. Do I have to be poor to be uniquely black? Do I have to be down for the struggle or be struggling, as Herman Edwards would put it? I love this. Delia, I love you, dear. We all make mistakes, but when we're in the public eye, all of our mistakes are replayed forever. Never forget. Well, what are you supposed to do? Delia, would you tell the Jews, hey, it's Hitler. Come on, everybody deserves a second chance. Can't we forgive him? Would you apply it there? Come on. Delia, I love you. Come on. Should we forgive the KKK?
You know, give them a break. You know, come on. Everybody makes mistakes. They just don't know.
Is that the way you would deal with it? Let me know. Just let me know. Of course. Valcine, thank you, my dear. Never, ever do you forget. Because those who forget their history are doomed to repeat it. And if we keep following these ideals, we lose the perspective of what is and what makes America great. But people can't deal with that. That's frightening to them to say that it's America. It's become fashionable to say that America is a horrible place. We live here. It's become fashionable to talk about how horrible we are. How horrible we are as a country. How bad we are. Folks, you don't know bad. You don't know bad. You haven't seen bad. The opportunities that are here cannot be found anywhere else. Some of you may argue, Switzerland, try it. It's cliche to bring out the Hitler argument. Of course we should never forget Hitler, Mussolini, or white slaveholders. Absolutely. Of course we should never forget them. So please stop talking to me about the Willie Horton thing we should get over. We can't get over it because a guy like Dukakis, trust me, is waiting in the wings. Waiting in the wings. Here is a president who put out a drug czar. Started the drug czar. Remember him? We had the most crack cocaine arrests in history under this president who started the drug czar. Remember him? The first black president, William Jefferson Clinton? And then pardoned the guy who was shipping 800 kilos of cocaine in a Tyson chicken truck. Should we forget that too? Some people make mistakes. Is that what it is that we should do? Should we forget that? We don't want another person like that in office. We don't. We don't want another person who says, I'm not going to sign the Welfare Act because I don't believe those people should have to work. Remember that guy, William Jefferson Clinton? Remember that guy? So we keep passing it off by saying, You know, can we forget about it? No. In order to be Americans, we must remember and never let it happen again. You Negroes are too goddamn passive. You heard me. You Negroes are just too goddamn passive. You can't forgive everybody or be selective in who it is that you forgive. Or who can and who can't get a second chance. If you're going to hold the same standards to one, you hold them to all. That is American. You make sure it's never repeated again. Well, blacks are different, right? You are so different. Are you really? I don't think so. But I know you have to be. I know it makes you feel better. It makes you feel better that you're different. Because then you get all the caveats that come with it. You get all the kudos that come with it. Your special treatment, special privileges. You need it. You live off of it. We'll be back. Reese on the radio right here on The Way That I See It, filling in for Jay King and Jimmy Kent this weekend. Are we too much black and not enough American is the topic we're talking about. Of course, until the end of the hour, I'll bring in some other news. Of course, afterwards, don't forget that The Real Dealia is on afterwards. And I meant to say this a couple of weeks ago. Please forgive me for not saying it. Congratulations to Dealia, The Real Dealia, her show, of course, airing after this. Congratulations. She's a very, very vocal person on the J. King Network. I'm glad she's got her show, which I'm going to be checking out again for the first time today. I checked her out for a couple of minutes. I believe it was last week she was talking about Oscar Pistorius, the Blade Runner, and the murder charge against him in South Africa. So I'm going to check her out again, see what she's talking about. Hopefully she'll come on and she'll tell us a little bit about what she's talking about. Let me read a couple of comments here. Excuse me, in the chat room. People are talking about the fact that I brought the Willie Horton thing. People are so upset when you bring up Willie Horton. They hate when you bring up Willie Horton. They do. They hate it when you bring up Willie Horton. Because Willie Horton, in some sort of ways, people take personally, like he offended you being black. Like, why did he release this knucklehead? You know they're going to turn around and they're going to put that on all black people. No, that wasn't the case at all. It was talking about the politics of Dukakis. That's all it was. People keep saying that the Willie Horton thing is a racial issue. That's bull. It's not a racial issue. If you think it is, you're an effing moron. I say that with anger because it angers me when people try to make that claim. Willie Horton was a freaking murderer and a piece of garbage. I don't give a damn what color he was. He was allowed out of prison, and he killed people. You want to make that about race? Go ahead. You're a fool. Anybody who is running for the president of the United States that would not protect the lives of American citizens by calling himself lenient, by showing people that he cared, I care about you, I want you to live, and puts out a policy that allows someone to get out of prison where he can kill. Yeah, it was a mistake, folks, but it wasn't that simple because it cost lives. What about the lives or the liberties in the pursuit of happiness of the people who died? Does theirs not matter? Is it more important to you than to protect Willie Horton? Nothing could be more disgusting to me. Let me, again, go back to reading a couple of comments here. In the chat room. Let me see. I'm trying to understand the point of Willie Horton. Wasn't that an issue from 1988? Yes. Yes, it was. Yes, yes, yes. Absolutely. And the crucifixion happened 2013 years ago, but we're still talking about it, right? What, are you kidding me? Isn't that from 1988? Yeah, it's from 1988. Were you alive in 88? Everything that happens in the past should be reflected on for our future so we don't repeat them. Yes, the Holocaust happened in the early 40s. Should we forget about that too? Should we move on from that too? How about September 11th? Or should we be over it? Can we move on? Yeah, 3,000 people died, but when are we just going to get over it? Is that what we should do? Don't make me laugh. These are, you know, and I hate to be this disrespectful, but allow me to do this. Indulge me, if you will. Where do you people come from? Where are you people coming from? That you tell me, wasn't that back in 88? If somebody robbed you 5 years ago at gunpoint, you still tell that story at parties, don't you? Huh? You still tell your friends about that.
Man, I remember when I got robbed. Man, put that gun in my face.
You haven't gotten over that yet, right? It didn't happen to you personally, so why should you care, right? See, all of it matters to me. All of it does. It matters to me. I'm worried about who's going to be the next person who's going to take office, locally or nationally. It bothers me if that person does not hold up the standards that make me American. and tries to diminish those values. Those things are American to me. I never thought that there were just so many pacifists in the black community. We got a group of freaking kids who are running around shooting people because somebody messed with his girlfriend or stepped on his freaking sneaker. They don't let that slide. But yet we got other people around here who see these atrocities happening in our country and they go, didn't that happen back in 88? I don't know, was Conniva Man, was it, is that how you pronounce it? I get it. These black conservatives have no real issues, so they reminisce about issues from damn near 30 years ago. Freon says, worse, he's losing both sides. Don't want them. If you don't agree with me, it's evident to me who it is that you are or how it is that you think. I don't want you on my side. I'd rather have no friends than a bunch of friends who don't agree with my ideals. Why would I allow you into my circle? You're only going to corrupt it and destroy it. This is probably why you're comfortable living in circles where people agree with you. And then when I do it, you talk about me losing both sides. Don't want them. See, that's called principle. Covina Man? Is that how it's pronounced? No, I don't know. It's like the city in South... Okay, I don't know. Covina in South Philly. California. Thank you. I appreciate that. Real deal. Yeah. You see, this is why I know that people cannot make arguments with me. They cannot deal with them. Because I'm dealing with a culture that's blinded. We don't want to talk about that. We're not interested in that. We don't care about that stuff. Isn't that over? Haven't we moved on? This is why your culture, when you keep asking yourself, see, this is the part that I always have to re-educate people with. When you're sitting around with your friends, you're having a drink, or you're at dinner, and you're talking about the culture declining, this is why it's declining. Because people like you sit around and go, is that still an issue? Why is he talking about that? It was 30 years ago. I keep that stuff up front and center to never forget, to never relive. That's why it's relevant to me. It's always relevant. Because of those people who let it slide, we allow a culture to decline. I mean, you don't have to be a brain surgeon on this, folks. You don't have to be a brain surgeon. Because you become so passive in our culture, or about what it is that makes us uniquely American, that's what it is that's destroyed us. It's what's made us weaker. And you're complicit. You're a part of it. Reese has never been west of Cleveland. Sorry, Beasley. San Francisco, Denver, Phoenix, been there. It's frightening, folks. It's frightening. Don't resort to the name calling. You're going to lose there. I'm not going to lose my cool here, but trust me, you don't want to go there. I'm pretty vicious there. Let me see what this is. Old, weak, flawed arguments, just like the Simpson of a larger illness. Lack of fact and an underlining unspoken issue. Freon, if you really, really believe that it's irrelevant, prove me wrong. Just saying it doesn't make it so. The declining of our culture is a reminder that we're separated and that we're segregated. I cannot believe that we live in a culture today. And that was the premise of the show. Are we too black other than being enough American? Is that we live in a culture that has forced us to segregate. Here it was, people celebrating desegregation, the civil rights movement, for us to all be treated equally. And now we have a bunch of people who cannot stop talking about how we are different. We're different. Our values are different. Our way of life is different. We're going right back to the segregation that I believe that African Americans' biggest hero, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., was fighting for the desegregation. You know, when his four little children would be judged by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. I thought that was relevant. Old issue? Is that one old? Should we forget about those words? I mean, it was what? Early 1960s?
DJ,
Who could be the boss? Look up to the cross, stranded in the land of the lost. Standing up, I'm sideways. I'm blazing up the path, running on the highways of rap. Choked up by the smoke and the charcoal. Fly the Samson brands me like a barcode. I'm dashing all the media strikes. I keep the media dykes as reinforcement for the fight. And not alone, I'll keep John Gotti on the phone. I'm tangled in the zone, I got the V's on the track. Where the fuck you at?
The cow.
Let me hear your pigeons run your mouth now.
Shut the fuck up.
I'm plugging in them social skills to keep my total bills over a million. The last time I checked it, thank God I'm blessed with the mind that'll wreck it. Waited till the second round and knock him out.
They call me Big John Studd, my middle name Mud. Dirty water flow, too much for you thug. That can't stand the flood. What up, Doc? Hold big gun like Elmer Fudd, the show shot. Mr. Meth, I'm unplugged. Learn, temperature's too hot, the sun block. Burn, playing with minds to get you state time. Locked behind 12 bars from a great mind. Killer bees in the club with his ladybug. Brought his sword to the dance floor to cut a rug. Love is love all day till they throw slug. And take another life in cold blood. Can't feel me till it's your blood. Murder race tremendous, crime is endless. Same issue, different day. Father forgive us, they know not what they do. All praise is due. I'm big like EZ and Big Bear Fool.
What's that? I didn't hear you.
Shut the fuck up.
Come on a little louder.
Shut the fuck up.
Everybody in the cabinet.
Shut the fuck up.
Get it on. 12 rounds of throwdown. Who hold crown? Protect land with 4 pounds. Limp biscuit. Get around like merry-go. Bust a scenario. Coming through your stereo. Why risk it? Lifestyles of the prolific and gifted. Haters sent you vitamins and minerals. Delicious. Word on the street is they fit my thesis. Knocked out they front teeth is trying to taste mine. Acting like they heard through the grapevine. Dope feeling for the baseline. Super 5 pound. Pharmaceuticals. Hardest nails to the cuticle. Where'd you find that monster? She beautiful. Wu-Tang and Limp biscuit. Roll on the set. Kick a hole in the speaker. Pull a plug and then jack.
Like that. So what's it all about? And where we gonna run? Maybe we can meet up on the sun. Discretion is advised with a blood of virgin eyes. We're living on the track with the method. So get the sun block. You're getting one shot. Until you dissolve, I revolve around everything you got. From out of nowhere, prepare. You'll be blinded by the glare. I told you not to stare. Now you're turned in the stone. Without a microphone. But don't you forget you're in the zone. So shut up and take shit back. Cause all your dish is whack.
Deal, deal with deal, deal.
When it's weighed out like that. Burning up your brain like a piston. So all those who didn't listen never even knew what they were missing. And never even knew that the sky was falling down. Wu-Tang Clan pull the crown.
What's that? I didn't hear you.
Shut up.
Come on a little louder.
Shut up.
Everybody in the cabin now.
Shut up.
Against the Democrat Simon Legree, who wanted to enslave those people. He stood up and he fought and he was willing to die for freedom. So anyone who wants to call me or any other African American an Uncle Tom doesn't know what they're talking about, because you don't know what an Uncle Tom is. You're a Sambo, you're a Quimbo, you're working for the Democrats. That's the party of slavery, and you're continuing the enslavement of our people.
Reese on the radio, we are back on the J. King Network. On the way that I see it, are we too much black and not enough American? I love the comments in there. I don't know who this person is. Asshole. Hey, listen, if that's it, what it is that your name, RB, whatever it is that your name is, dude, please do not do this. I'm warning you, my friend. Don't do this. Don't be an internet thug. It's clown. It's clown. Leave it to the professionals like Brown Beasley, but don't be an internet thug. Okay? You're not a thug. Calling me all types of names, I'm not impressed. Okay? I don't like phone thugs either. See, I'm the type of dude, and my wife doesn't like this about me, I give my home address, my friend. If I gotta get it, I get it. If I gotta take a lump in, I take a lump in. Don't play yourself and be an internet thug. Not only do I not take kindly to it, but I'm real disrespectful. And I don't go after your moms either. I'm real disrespectful. And if you want to see me get that way, make another personal attack towards me. I'll get real personal, my friend. And when I say I keep it real, I keep it real. So pause with all of that. Okay? I knock you out. I knock everybody out. I don't play that. Okay? If I got to come to you, I'll come to you. I don't play that. So pause with it. All right? Now, if you want to get loose, get loose. I'd love to see you not be afraid. But watch your mouth. I take all types of insults in the chat room. I take them all day. I don't mind that. But when you start getting personal, when you start getting really, really personal, and you don't know me like that, then I have to address you personally. Watch your mouth, or I will slap it for you. And when I say I'll slap it for you, I'm talking bitch slap you. Like a fucking girl. You want to have a conversation with me? Have a conversation with me. Don't disrespect me. And you know, let me talk out of turn because I don't curse on these mics. But I got to make sure that I make it evidently clear to you. All my phone numbers are available. My address available. You can look me up, my friend. I don't hide from anybody. There's no skirts over here. So back to my conversation. Oh, yeah, okay. Let's get back to the phones. The number is 347-205-9366 if you want to call in. Jay King, hello. Okay, maybe he's not there. All right, I guess he's not. Anyway, we'll move on. Again, like I said, don't forget to check out The Real Delia after this show. The way that I see it, I got plenty of other news, plenty of other views to get into. I got plenty more audio to play. Hey, R&B, like I said, come with it, my man. We'll take a break. I'll deal with some other issues. We got plenty of audio, by the way, because I got some other stuff that I need to play that I put into the system that I need to talk about because it is Sunday. There's plenty of stuff going on. I'm sure you know. And we'll be back in a minute.
All across the world, big boys and girls, moving and grooving to the soul shocking beat. All across the world, big boys and girls, moving it. I like the way you move. All together. I like the way you move. Period. Baby. I just wanna dance with you. Come on, come on. I just wanna dance with you.
come on, come on.
I just wanna hold you close.
Come on, come on.
Take you in my arms.
Come on, come on.
Let me rock you to the beat.
Rockin' and shockin' it, yes we are.
Sounds so sweet and mellow.
Movin' and groovin' it, yes we are.
I wanna rock you to the beat.
Drums alive, we rockin' it.
Feel the bass inside your waist.
Drums are dance, we rockin' it.
Feel the bass inside your soul.
Rockin' and shockin' it, yes we are.
To front and belly to belly.
Come on.
Me and you got to dance together. Front to front and belly to belly.
Come on.
Me and you want to dance together. Step front, front, back, side to side. Two step front, front, back, side to side. Two step front, front, back, side to side. Back, side to side. Back, side to side. Two step, open up, back, side to side. Two step, open up, back, side to side. Two step, open up, back, side to side. Back, side to side.
Oh,
darling, I just like to groove with you.
Come on, come on.
I like it when you whisper in my ear.
Nobody, 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 nobody but you.
You're making me keep time.
One, two, three, four.
Darling, you look so fine.
You do, you do.
Smelling like an Asian man.
On the radio, top of the hour on this Sunday, the 10th of March, 2013. That was Most Def with Vanilla Mojica. A lot of people are commenting on my little outburst. Well, it had to happen, like it or not. And I don't mind the enemies, but when you get ridiculous, then I have to deal with it. This is radio. It's free forum. I would have done this in terrestrial radio. I have done this on terrestrial radio. You personally go after me, I address it. I always have. Some people saying, oh, ignore it. Who doesn't? No, 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 no. Again, folks, this is what I'm talking about, that passive nature. I'm not passive. I am not passive, and I'm not passive aggressive either. I deal with it. I let them know, yes, I recognize you. Yes, yes, you said something that offended me. That offended me? Yes, yes, that's right. You offended me. Just to let you know, nah, I'm not going for that. Because once you tell people that it's okay to offend you, then they just offend you all the time. Unless you let them know that there's a line to be crossed. I know that's how you people handle what it is that you handle. That's you. But I'm not you. Don't expect me to be you. I don't expect you to be me. But let me address a couple of things that Freon was saying in the Let me address some of the things that are being said. Freon, in particular. Freon made a comment about, let me move up here to what Freon wrote so I make sure that I quote him or her correctly. Old saying, if you argue with a fool, onlookers can't tell who is who. Back to your flawed concept. To be black in America is the epitome of being an American. Prove there is a difference between black folks and other Americans. Well, again, as I always say, and I'm still asking the question, because I did ask you this, Freon, what did blacks build? Blacks built America? America is a country that spans over 3,000 miles. I'm not even talking square footage here. I'm just talking distance to distance, coast to coast. What did they build? They built America? It's kind of an arbitrary statement, don't you think? It's kind of arbitrary. They built America. What did they build? Did they build the railroads? Tell me what it is that they built. What am I missing here? They built America. I just want to know. Chicago, Los Angeles, and the economy of the 13 colonies. That's America? What did they do in Nebraska? How about Wyoming? What they do in Montana? What they build there? Anything? Colorado? Iowa? What they build there? Well, it's not. That's not America. That is a state. That is 13 states in particular. America is all 50 states. What they build? You said they built America. I can't say that I built a house if I only made the bathroom. Do I really, really have to punch people in the face with these facts? I can't say I built the house if I only built the kitchen. America is 50 states. You said they built it. Where? What did they build? Yeah, Brown Beasley. Yes, I'm referring to them as they. Because I wasn't here. They are a they. I didn't build it. I don't have some sort of claim on what it is that Freon here is saying that black people built. I have no claim on it. I didn't do the work. I can't take claim for something I didn't do work for. What they build? That's an appropriate way to ask the question. What did they build? It's a real simple question. The number's 347-205-9366. Let's go to the 916 area code. Who's this?
This is Joe Levy, brother.
Hey, what's up, Joe Levy? How are you?
I'm doing good, man. I wanted to comment on the what that they built. We probably disagree just probably across the board politically and ideologically, which is cool. I respect your right to feel and express yourself the way you do. I don't agree with you. I think there's been too much black bloodshed in this country for you to even have the right to even think like you think, but that's your own opinion, and we live in America, and everybody's entitled to their own views. But I know what my ancestors did. I know what they shed. I know the blood that was shed in this country so that these people could enjoy what they enjoy today over the backs of hundreds and hundreds of thousands of black slave laborers in this country for 400 years. Maybe you don't understand what that's all about, but I certainly do.
Actually, I do. Hold on for a second. I do know that. Now, let me make sure I make this clear. I do. I understand 100% the labor that was put in by our ancestors in this country. I understand 100% the labor. I understand the impoverishment that was put upon our ancestors. I'm well aware of that. But when someone makes a claim that blacks built America, I only ask one significant question. You can't just say they built America, and then when I ask you what did they build, you not be able to tell me what it is clearly that they built. You don't just get to say it because it sounds nice.
You have to, for me, I'm saying, because people act like I'm not supposed to even ask the question. How dare you even ask? What did they build? Well, I'm asking, if I were your child and I said, Daddy, what did they build? What did blacks build in this country? And you said to them, well, I don't know, baby. They just built the America.
Well, I don't
it's
believe that.
Unsatisfactory.
That we built what we built then, when we built the industrial complex of this nation, we built the wealth that has now been spread through generations and generations of folks that somehow missed our folks. That's what we built. My grandfather was a sharecropper. That wasn't that long ago, and probably yours too. That wasn't that long ago. So it's not that far removed from the shackles of slavery and the shackles of segregation. It's not that far removed. So I applaud you, you know, that you can now feel emancipated enough to come out and talk about, you know, what did we do and what exactly did we build and put it in those terms. I respect that, but I don't agree with you. I think
Hold on. See, that's unfair. Hold on. That's unfair for you to say that I'm trivializing it. But wait. Again, you're saying that I'm trivializing it by asking a simple – but leave it. Hear me out, please. You're saying I'm trivializing it by asking a very clear question.
Saying it's a simple question, brother. That's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is when you the way that you're placing the question is like, what did we build? What didn't we build?
How about the railroads? Okay, the railroads.
Blacks built the railroads along with the Chinese.
Okay, so blacks built the railroad along with the Chinese.
Absolutely.
Did the Chinese build America?
They contributed as they certainly contributed in building America.
So you're saying blacks built everything? But blacks built everything.
I didn't say blacks built everything. You put words in my mouth. Those words didn't come out of my mouth.
Of course. Words in your mouth if you say that blacks built America. You're saying that we wouldn't have an America without blacks building it. Isn't that what it is that's being said here? Okay.
Let me be very clear what I'm saying here so that we don't have any misunderstandings. Now,
that's all I'm
saying. Without African Americans, there would be no America. Not the way that we know it. This country was built on the blood and the backs of black people.
Acceptable answer. I have no disagreement with you there. But what I don't respond to, and this is where it is that people have this issue with me. What I don't respond to is that when people make blanket statements without fact, and that's where I have a problem. I'm not trying to in any way discredit our culture as black people by asking the question, what is it that we built? I know what blacks built in this country. I know what they're responsible for making of this country. I know the heritage of that. I built my life around it. My question to people is that not only do I not want it overstated or exaggerated, I don't want people lying about it. Because when you lie about it, when you promote falsehoods about your history, okay, it harms you.
What falsehoods are people promoting about our history?
Boom. I'm so glad you asked. Okay, I'm glad you asked, okay? People are under the impression, and if you ask kids today, they say that we were stolen from our country. Do you know that to be true? Were we stolen?
We were stolen from our country. Let's see.
Really?
Slave traders come to our country, forced us out by gunpoint, line us up and ship us over here. Were there people complicit in the country of Africa? Absolutely. But yes, I would say that black people were stolen from their country and brought in, forced to work.
Who stole them altogether? Was it the white man or was it their own tribal
or anti-tribal or counter-tribal groups that sold them? Who sold them? Who stole them?
I don't think anybody can answer that accurately without being there. I can tell you this. If it were not for those people that suffered those indignities, that made it in those ships over here, your black ass and my black ass wouldn't be here right now having this conversation. So I'm going to say this. Let's give the ancestors their due and their respect and not trivialize the experience. The fact of the matter is black people were plundered and misused and mistreated in this country for hundreds of years.
Absolutely.
To create the United States of America.
Did you hear me in any way whatsoever? Leave me. Hold on. Did you hear me in any particular way say that wasn't a fact? If you listened to the beginning of this show, the first thing I said was it was the biggest offense of this country was the keeping of slaves. It's the biggest offense this country will never get over was the keeping of slaves.
Well, we're not going to get over it without recognizing, man, that there's an offense and that the offense has never been made right.
It has to be made right. It has to be made right. But the question will always be, how does one make it right? I don't know the answer to that. I'm going to take another call after you. But go ahead. I want to hear what you have to say.
I know the answer to that, man. The answer to that is people rising up and demanding it. People stop falling into this paradigm of falseness and educate themselves and start realizing that we have $30 billion worth of wealth in this country and that we can take care of our own problems and we don't need a nanny state or anything else to do that. But until we start putting money in the pockets of preachers and the politicians and all these different people and start focusing on our own neighborhoods and our own police and our own banks and our own hospitals and our own schools, we will continue to follow down this plight. So that's my own personal opinion. I have a whole list of fixes for the plight and the uprising of black people in this country, the peaceful uplifting of black people in this country. And it begins with education. But that's not going to happen as long as we have people doing what
now
they do.
Now, why do you think that you and I – see, this is what baffles me, is that you believe in some odd way we're in opposition of ideas.
I don't believe that at all. I believe we share a lot of ideas, bro.
Okay. All right, I'm glad to hear that.
We share a lot of ideas. We just have a different way of expressing it. See, I don't believe in the Republican paradigm. I believe
that there's a
Democratic paradigm. I don't believe in the Democratic paradigm either. Both of them are the same poison with two different looks on the face.
All right, let's take another call. Leave you. Stay on the line. Hold on 1 second. The number is 347-205-9366. It's Reese on the radio on the way that I see it. Who do we have on the line now? Is this Freon?
Freon Petier.
Hey.
Hello. Now, Reese, first off, I just want to let you know that the basis of the entire concept of the show is flawed. First off, how you prove that blacks are not American. That's the flaw in your whole argument.
Really?
Black folks have been in America and have been involved in every aspect of the founding and operating of this country. So your concept is flawed from the beginning.
Well, okay. Whoa. It's not my concept.
Wait. Prove that first your statement that being black in America is not American. Then we can argue that point.
I didn't suggest
that. Excuse me. So how can you be more black or less American? You can. The epitome of being American is to be a black person in America.
Well,
more American than black folks in America?
Can you hear me?
How can you
can
be
you,
more I'll American answer. Than Christmas Alex?
I'll explain it to you. Very, very, very eloquently, I will explain it to you. What I said
it because
was,
there's no basis for it.
Sure there is. Sure there is.
Let's hear it.
Sure it is. If you were to talk to plenty of African Americans on the concept
No. This is hearsay. I want you to tell me some fact. Tell me a fact that
proves that black folks are not American in some way. You said I'm going based on hearsay.
No, you're talking about if you talk to people. I'm talking about a fact that shows that your claim that black folks in America are not American.
Oh, okay. So my
example
not American. I never
of how
made,
black folks are not American.
An first, argument. It's a straw man. Can I finish, please? It's a straw
absolutely.
Man. I never once said that blacks in any way weren't American. You're making a straw man argument. I never made that argument.
No. What is the title of the show? What's the title of the show, Reese? Don't be afraid of confronting your own flaw. No. What is the title of the show?
How can we be more
American than being black folks in America?
Goodness gracious. Did you want me to answer your question? I said,
absolutely.
Are we too much black and not enough American? The premise
that makes
of the question,
absolutely no sense.
Can I finish?
Tell me how it makes sense.
I'm about to.
I'm listening.
There are more. The idea behind the question is that are more people following what are considered cultural ideologies versus an American one?
And I'll dismantle that for you right now. America has no individual culture. Culture in America is a conglomerate, a
melting
mixing
pot
of cultures. Hold on. So anytime that any group of people have come to America, they have lent portions of their culture to American culture. And if you're trying to say that somehow you can detach or separate American black culture from American culture, then you're flawed.
There's nothing in American popular culture that did not
originate from black folks.
Again, this is where I fundamentally disagree with you.
Well, I'd like to hear the basis of your fundamental disagreement.
Well, good. Thank you. My fundamental disagreement about what is considered American culture versus what would be considered black culture is what we talk about on this show often is that what we identify as being black or Asian or Hispanic based upon their fundamental beliefs on the way that they behave, how they perform at certain tasks. There are plenty of
things. Are you actually trying to say that all black people think the same?
I didn't say that. I did not.
Oh, okay. So what is a fundamental Hispanic view?
Beautiful. A fundamental Hispanic view is very Christian. Did you know
Of course it is. I think that's presumptuous. I bet you there's a fair number of atheists that are Hispanic. See, this is the problem. This is a problem from the right always. You're trying to roll over your own boo-boo. And this is the problem.
No. I'm not trying to roll over
anything. I think the right always tries to group any group of people together. That can't be done in America.
Are you just gonna talk and filibuster?
Absolutely, but what you're saying has no basis in reality. It is a constant refrain from the right to group people together. That's called stereotyping. That doesn't work.
All right, I'm just putting you on pause for a second. I'll let you speak, but I'm putting you on hold for a second. Just listen for a second. If you think that it's stereotyping for me to say that majority of Hispanics' culture embraces their Christianity, and then for you to respond to that by saying, I bet you there is a considerable amount of atheists in the Hispanic community in America?
Not in any country.
I'm giving it to you again. Please respond to that one statement you make, and then we'll move on.
You're going to tell me that the Hispanic culture
is not fundamentally Christian. And that's a stereotype.
Are you ready, Reese?
Going for it.
Reese, what you're saying essentially is that your generalization is better than my generalization, and there's no basis for either one.
Okay. Edward in Connecticut, good friend of mine, always brings up the stats. I love him for it. Despite the surprising percentages of Latino Protestants, the vast majority of U.S. Latinos, 70% are Catholics. 70.
What in the hell does that have to do with anything?
Nothing.
I didn't make my point.
Nothing to do with anything. Reese, you're losing the argument.
I think I made my argument pretty clear. I said that they were Christian, Catholic, or whatever. But the bottom line is they're Christian, right?
Okay.
Right?
No, not right. There are probably many that don't believe in anything.
70% is not a majority?
Oh, come on. Okay, then what about the 30%? Do they exist?
We're just done here. I've never heard anything. Levy, you hear what I just said? 70% of them are Catholic. That's not a majority? What does it take?
Okay, so 70% of Hispanics are Catholic, man. Okay? 100% of blacks in this country are angry. 100% of this black people.
No, they're not.
In this country, 100% of black people in this country have a black experience that most white Americans will never even have.
Probably true. probably 100% true.
Now, Reese, you've experienced on your own and your own. I've heard you talk about a couple of things that you went through that I didn't have to admit through. Okay?
Right.
And so let's not act like that's not an American experience. You was pretty black when you was facing that white judge who was trying to throw your ass in jail.
The judge wasn't trying to throw me in jail, but the prosecutor was.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The establishment. There are 23 million people in this country in jail. 23 million. Most of them is black and brown.
You're absolutely right about that. And again,
that's an American experience. That's more than the population of some countries. It's a for-profit industry. And it all trickles down to us, just us. That's the justice. You don't see white people being shot in the back by police while they're handcuffed. You don't see white folks being shot down.
You may not see it, but that doesn't mean it doesn't happen. But I get your point.
It doesn't happen to the proportion that it happens to us. You wouldn't
again, still not disagreeing with you. I said, okay, we cannot say that because we don't see it, it doesn't happen. By the way, let me make one more point before I bring Freon back in. Edward went so far, and Edward does all the time, went so far as to say 0.37% of Latinos are atheists. Does he consider that a considerable amount? 0.37. Not even
really
a whole
think,
percent.
I don't even think that's an issue, man, of people that, you know, believe. Most people, man,
no, but what I was saying about was what hear me out, Levy. What my whole point was about whether or not we as black people, okay, we as black people are more concerned about our blackness or more in touch with our ethnicity than it is about us being American. Do we pay attention to us being American? What is uniquely
– I can't agree with you on that because my life is my life as a black American. When I walk into a bank, I'm not the one that's looking at me thinking, is this black man wanting to rob me or not? When I pull up in the grocery store and people follow me around the grocery store or follow me around the department store, that's not me saying, man, I just want to come in here and shop and these white people won't let me. When I walk into the bank as a business owner and I break out my portfolio and I'm telling them constantly, I can't give you this loan, Mr. Levy, even though you've been in business for 27 years, that's my experience as a black man. My white associates don't deal with that. We are facing these things constantly. We pay 12% more for automobiles when we walk into a dealership. We pay more for gas in our neighborhoods when we go at the pump. This is what our children are the ones that's locked up. Our children are the ones that's being shot down in the streets like dogs. Our communities are the ones that are filled with drugs. We don't have any drug factories. How does it get there? Who's making the money? Our communities have a drugstore
The Mexicans are making the money. Are making the money, not the white folks. the Mexicans are making a crap load of money,
man.
My friend. Listen to me. Again, that was the whole point here, is that I wanted to have a dialogue to talk about what it is that uniquely makes us have this sort of ideal or this thought pattern of why it is that it is not easy for blacks to become more American as opposed to dealing with their ethnicity. And you just eloquently brought it out.
I can't agree with you that we're not more American because we are most American. This is the real American experience, my brother. This is what being black
real,
and American
hold on,
is.
Hold on. Got to stop you there. You said this is the real American experience. The real American experience is all the things that you just laid out?
That's the real American experience, brother. That's the real American experience. Now, let me ask you a question. I know that you have, you know, right political leanings, but let us both walk into one of these banks. We both will get the same treatment no matter what your right-leaning experience is. They can't see inside your mind and say, oh, he's one of us.
Oh, no, I doubt that.
He's not one of us.
I doubt that.
You're not one of us.
I seriously doubt
that. You wouldn't even be invited into the Republican caucus because you're not one of us.
Not true.
No matter how right your leanings are.
Not true. Not true.
They'll exploit you.
No, they won't. Let me explain this to you. Levy, no. See, this is what I'm talking about.
Let me give you an example.
Okay? All
right, go ahead.
The first bottom line is you said that they would never, ever invite me, right? And if they were, it were to exploit me, right?
Mm-hmm. Look at our black Republican in here. We've got blacks.
Right. Hold on. No one ever asked me to be a conservative. No one ever asked me. No one walked up to me and said, hey, Reese, hold on. No one ever walked up to me and said, hey, Reese, why don't you be a conservative? No one did that. I chose that based upon my own principles, right? Mm-hmm. I got into talk radio talking about conservatism. I never had one person walk up to me and invite me anywhere. The reason why is because I never, ever cared about it. I don't want to be a part of a group. I never want to be a part of groupthink.
But
because
you
once you're part
of –
hold on. Once you are a part of groupthink, once you say something that they don't like, they try to structure it into something that they agree with. I don't do that. I'm not a part of that structure.
You are a part
My conservatism – whoa. I'm not.
You're not a part of any
– no, I'm not. I'm not a part of a group. I can't be.
You're a part of a group. You're a part of a group. And when you was in that courtroom, the prosecutor saw you as part of the same group that I'm a part of. The same group that
Sure
Dr.
he did.
King is part of. And every
sure
other
he
of
did.
Apart.
Sure
part of
he did. But wait. But now, hold on. Now
Even
he has power? But hold on. But I agree with you on every point you're making. But what in what you just said gives him power?
Exactly. What gives him power?
Yeah.
What
where's his power?
Power.
What gives? Yeah. Where's his power? Where is his power in that?
Mm-hmm.
He believes it. He believes that I'm black. I committed this crime, and that's enough. That's enough.
That was all it took. Where did he get that power from?
Wait.
He got the power from the run to effect slavery. The same place he got the power to lock up all these kids in the penitentiary for minor crimes and give them long ass jail sentences. Where does that power come from, man? Where?
Well, the power comes from whether or not you have the fortitude, the intestinal fortitude, to fight back.
So let me ask
that is what I believe.
You don't think that black people have the intestinal fortitude to fight back? We've been fighting back all our lives. That's the American experience. We're still fighting back. That's why you're on here on the air talking about right now why our experience is more black than American. And I'm telling you that the two are inextricably put together. You can't be no more American than being black. We live this experience every day, and so do you. The fact of the matter is that somebody's head was beat in, bashed in, so you can call yourself conservative. But just 50 years ago, you would have...
Hold on. Now you're off the rails there, Levy.
Who got bashed in so I could be a Republican? No, listen to what I'm saying, man. So you can have your right to your opinion, because 50 years ago, you didn't have an opinion. You didn't have a right. You couldn't even vote.
That's right. And who were the people who did not...
You couldn't walk around with that white woman. 50 years ago.
Who was the group that kept that from happening? What was the power structure that kept that from happening?
It wasn't Republicans. It was the white
yes,
power
it was.
Structure.
It had everything to do with politics.
It had nothing to do with politics. Because politics didn't land you in court. Politics
What's that?
Politics was trying to throw you in jail.
Sure they were.
Politics was trying to prosecute you.
Sure it was. Absolutely.
If you went to the prosecutor and said, listen, I'm a conservative. I think like you. Innocent good.
You're wrong. No. Levy. Stop. You're wrong there. First of all, my prosecutor was a liberal, a strong liberal, real big liberal.
I'm trying to say because you was conservative, they're trying to put your black ass in jail.
In fact,
come on, man.
Can you let me speak? I'm going to tell you. If you listen to me, you'd know this. During my court case, which, by the way, went on for a year and a half after after my mistrial, okay? Mm-hmm. I went through this for 4 years. Do you want to know what was the biggest thing that they were trying to get into the courtroom?
What was that?
About my the fact that I was a conservative. They were referring to me as a neocon in court.
Yeah. Okay, well, let me ask you a question.
Yeah, you didn't know
what
that, did you?
About
you didn't
the,
know
what
that,
about
did
the,
you?
What about the other 23 million brothers that's behind bars, sisters behind bars, that don't have
you talk. Services? You can't switch the subject now, Levy. You were talking about me.
No, man.
And
I'm
telling
you. I'm trying to tell you something here, and you're trying to make it combative. What I'm trying to tell you
No. I listened to you.
The only reason why you was in that courtroom is because a white girl said you raped her. It was her white word against your black ass.
Absolutely.
That was it.
And guess what?
That was it. That was the whole thing.
But what happened?
I'm assuming that you was able to beat the case. You were innocent.
That's right.
How many brothers
and that was more. But that in and of itself.
Brothers?
Hold on. But that in and of itself is more important than anything. Is that you can make this about the fact that this was a white girl against a black man. The bottom line is that truth and justice had to prevail because that's what it is that I believed in. Not because I was looking for a jury.
Okay, nope. I can do that. How many brothers are locked up with the same truth and the same injustice? You know,
I understand that. I understand that.
They didn't even commit. I'm in it.
Well, guess what? If they didn't commit it, do you think that it's advantageous for them to use an issue of their race or an issue of truth and justice? Yes or no?
What does it matter? The fact of the matter is that it's the issue of their race that's got them in there. It's the same thing they had you in there. You was fortunate that the Lord saw fit to let you get out of the situation. In some such a measure, you was blessed to find something that got you off.
The truth. That's all it was.
Thousands of brothers that's locked up that didn't have those resources. They might not have had the intelligence. They might not have had the lawyers. They might not have had the resources to fight for that justice. But they're just as innocent as you are.
I had a legal aid attorney.
And
I didn't pay for it. Well, all right. I'm going to take another call. The number, right. Numbers, stay on the line, Libby. I want you to stay here. Numbers 347-205-9366. Who's on the line? Is that you, Mary?
No.
Who's on the line here?
Hi. Are you speaking to me?
Hey, who's this?
Yes,
I am.
The solution, if we are connected, can you hear me? I can't tell.
Yes, I can. I can hear you.
Right. I wonder, if I may, I would like to raise this conversation to the level that it must go. Being an American is not just about geography. It's also about your understanding of the system and structure at play here. So if you're weak, if your community is weak financially, generally you're going to be weak as a person. So instead of spending a lot of energy, really talking much to do about nothing, it would be interesting to talk about how you could improve your financial condition, how to improve the financial condition of your community. Now, Dr. Claude Anderson wrote an excellent book called Powernomics. You can bitch and scream and fart all day long about justice you're not receiving in America. No one gives a damn. If you don't have money, you're ass out. Period. So
right. So you're saying there's a strong in this particular conversation. You believe that it's less about race and more about economics.
You damn right it is.
I agree with you there.
Okay. So the thing of it is, if you look at Black Americans, and I like all people. But it's almost 100%, given the opportunity, they'll do the wrong thing. They'll talk about the wrong thing. They'll adopt the ideas, and they'll practice inappropriate behavior, as Dr. Anderson likes to talk about.
Man,
and because that's the reason
Dr.
they
Anderson
don't – they prefer to be victims than be victors.
Man, get this fool off.
Hold on, Levy. One second. What's your name, sir?
I missed the solution.
Mr.
Now, you
Solution.
Tell
okay.
me, now, the idiot who just spoke up, you ask this
no,
person,
no, that's no need for
name-calling,
Mr. Solution. That's not a solution, calling somebody a name. Hold
you
on.
Ask, well, I was called a name first. Play back the damn tape. What
okay,
I'm saying
right,
is it, when you have weak, financially weak people, those people will be treated as if they're bottom dwellers because that's the way things work here. To get on top or near the top, you have to be financially successful, both in your person and in your community. Do you disagree with that?
Not at all.
Okay, so then why would a guy, and who was that guy? Point him out, by the way. Why did he say that I'm an idiot for what I'm saying?
Put him back on the phone.
Well okay, I'm
going
to give him. Levy, here's your chance to respond.
Let me tell you something, Matt. I'm a business owner. I have 64 employees. 64. My parents were very, very poor when we came up. and we were not predisposed to do the wrong thing. My mother worked hard. She was a domestic, my grandmother. My mother went to school, danced in the day, and went to school at night. So I take offense when I hear anybody talking about how predisposed we are to do the wrong thing because of our economics. Black people have always been upstanding and peaceful people in the community that have done nothing but been a credit to this planet and a credit to this nation. And the world is black, my brother, not just the United States of America.
Missing the point. You're doing the right thing, but you don't understand when you hear someone else saying that we're saying the same thing. And
No, we're not saying the same thing. You said that black people are
poor. Listen, we're not saying the same thing.
No. Hold on, Levy. Stop for a second. Levy, stop for a second. He did not say black people. If you listen to everything that he just said, in no way did he even infer black people. He was talking about anyone financially. He's saying that this is less about race and more about economics. He never even pinpointed a race. He never once pointed to a race. And that's the only reason why I'm agreeing with him, because he's saying, again, look, in fact, he's arguing with me, saying, Reese, I think your point is a little misconstrued here, because if you really listen to the argument, most of the people we're talking about are those who lack the financial fortitude to combat those issues that happen in this country. That's where
he's arguing. Absolutely. They're disempowered.
There you go.
And as long as they argue for things like religion, you know, and expecting the Messiah to save them, they're forever going to be at the bottom of the barrel. As long as they're looking to a preacher, giving a preacher their money, and the preacher is taking their money and living a very earthly life, a very secular life, and telling them you'll get yours in the by and by, you know, that's a bunch of garbage. Build up your communities. Everybody does that. If you look at immigrants,
I work with you right now because I believe you and I are definitely on the same plane on that point there.
But the point is this. This is the area of what I call a life class. And what happens so often is you find people who are dejected and at the bottom, they don't discuss real issues. They discuss emotion, but not real issues. Emotions are fine. That's what makes us human. But emotions alone will not get you where you need to go. So if you look at it from the standpoint, what are you complaining about? What is the problem? Now, what are some viable solutions? Get to work on them. That's it. It's only about a 3 to a 4 step process.
You make a very, very good point.
Mr. I said in the beginning that I believe that I have solutions for our own community. Like I said, we have over $30 billion a year worth of buying power. That buys a whole lot of education, a whole lot of medicine. We could have our own hospitals, our own banks, our own police force, our own schools, and raise our whole community up by the bootstraps if we weren't putting our money, like I said earlier, in the pockets of these preachers, in the pockets of these other establishments. We don't have to go to Macy's and shop. We can go to Jamal's and shop. We don't have to go to Walmart and shop. We can go to Black Mart and shop. I mean, there's a whole way of raising up our community.
He called it Black Mart. I love that, though.
our fortunes around. So, brother, I apologize. I wasn't clear. I misunderstood with your point. And now that you've clarified, I have to owe you an apology.
And that's good, gracious of you to at least apologize, Levy. That's a man move up there, and I commend you for that. I'm going to take a break, folks. When we get back, we'll finish this up. We've got another 20 minutes left on the show. I thought we were going to go on to other topics, but apparently we're not. We'll take that. We'll finish taking your calls, and don't forget the real dealia. When we end our show is going to be on right after. You don't have to go anywhere. You just stay where you are. The real dealia. Comes on right after Reese on the Radio on The Way That I See It, Are We Too Much Black and Not Enough American? When we return, it's Reese on the Radio.
Reese on the Radio, we are back 15 minutes to the top of the hour right here on the J. King Network. This March the 10th, 2013. Thank you all for being a part of the show. Again, in about 15 minutes, the real deal, yeah. The real deal will, well, the real deal, yeah, that's what it's called. It's her show. Comes on afterwards. I'll be checking her out. I hope you will be too. I want to read something by Freon Pete. He says, Reese, with the little respect you are due as the host, I take issue with the premise of the alleged topic. Blacks in America have no other culture than which was developed and practiced in America, American culture. Well, Freon, this is where I disagree with you. Because in conversing with African Americans, and you'll hear them speak publicly, you hear them speak on the radio talking about it, on talk shows, on radio shows, most will disassociate themselves with the American ideal. Most will, that I've experienced, I can't say most that you've experienced or anyone else, but most that I've experienced, will suggest that the Constitution is a white man's Bill of Rights, not a black man's. Hey, fine, whatever. That's, you know, that's their argument. That's fair to have it for whatever reasons they may be. If I disagree with them, I disagree with them. But let me make something abundantly clear. If there's anything that you don't have a right of, is that you don't have a right not to be offended. And if you take issue with it, so be it. I'm just bringing up the conversation. You don't like the conversation? That's fine as well. But I'm trying to have a dialogue with people, whether you agree with me or you don't agree with me. If you want to fight with me about it, that's all okay. That's the whole point of it, is to have a discussion. Here's what it is that I see and I believe. If I'm misdirected in some sort of way, the whole idea is to pick up the phone, call 347-205-9366 and challenge it. If I'm out of sorts, that's the point. You don't have to take issue with anything. And if you take issue with it, argue it. Don't make it personal. I see some people in the chat room who were appalled by me. Who is this guy? Well, I'm an independent thinker. I think what I think, and I'm allowed to do that. I have a right to do that. But when you start asking that question, is who is he? What is he talking about? Who does he think he is? Well, that tells me a little something about you. That's what it says about me. That's what it says to me. It says a little something about you. Again, 347-205-9366. Let's take another call here from the 916 area code. Who's this? Hello? Somebody have the mute button on. Okay. I guess they hung up. Anyway, let's bring I want to bring in Mr. Solution again. Mr. Solution, you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Now, again, the premise of this and the reason why Jay King brought it up and he thought it was a great subject for me to bring up, I've got my own views on this, was that he believes that there is a cultural difference with black people in general. Again, this is his question, not mine, that black people in some way segregate themselves from being American. That's the way that he sees it, if I may speak on his behalf. Do you think that that has any merit?
Absolutely. But I think we need to define what that culture is.
Okay.
Yes, I agree with that. And I know what it is, but just so we're on the same page, why don't
okay.
you tell me what that culture is?
Well, I believe that there is a culture within the African-American community that one, and it must. This is not me judging them or making casting aspersions. What I believe that the African American culture has done as of late is in reminding itself of American slavery, has then disassociated itself with the idea of America. It's like, how can I be a part of a country that enslaved my people? How can I meld myself with that ideal when my ancestors came to the country, they were forced, they were shackled here. And it's hard for me to associate with a country that once did that. So how can I,
it's hard for me to be an American. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, that's where I believe that the structural part of where they're coming from is.
That's a very good point, but I would say to you, quite candidly, most people are not operating on that particular thought pattern. It's
really?
It's just inappropriate behavior. Now, some may, but I think that would be the manifest minority. Most are just acting irresponsibly and dysfunctionally, and that is something that can crop up in any group. And that's what a culture is designed to do, is to set barriers on craziness and get the people on one accord. So the book I just recommended to you, I don't know if you're familiar with it, it's called Powernomics by Dr. Claude Anderson. He was the Undersecretary of Commerce, I believe, under the Carter administration.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also the Superintendent of Education in Florida. I was just picking some oranges to make some fresh squeezed orange juice. But at any rate, so, I don't think this is a viable excuse for most people's irresponsible, inappropriate behavior. I think,
first of all,
I practice what's in the book. The book will work for anybody. There are particular standards in America that will help anyone work through what they need to work through. And they just have to, because I see people come from other countries, they can't even speak the language, and they come over here and become successful. They do it quietly, unassumingly, you know, and in that particular fashion. So I would have to ask all these whiny complainers, what the hell do you want? And then secondarily, what goals do you have for procuring and securing what you want? And when I'm talking to people, especially irresponsible and people who practice inappropriate behavior, that cuts them off at the knees right there, because they
have
no goals or plans.
I'm going to get an opportunity here for someone to answer that question. I believe this is Freon. Freon, you still on the line?
Yeah, I'm still on the line. I was just thinking when he mentioned that book about Tom Sowell's book, Black Rednecks and White Liberals, where he basically outlines the origins of contemporary black culture being of the white American culture post-Civil War. So, you know, the whole concept that there is a culture of black folks that is separate from American culture is kind of ridiculous in my eyes. Sure,
okay.
There may be some issues that black people overwhelmingly side on one or the other side, but to say that they are not American because they side that way is kind of losing the whole concept of what American culture is. There is nothing that black culture has provided to America that hasn't been adopted as American culture. Music, blues, becomes rock and roll. Black culture, the lexicon is affected by black culture constantly. 25 years ago, the word "dis" was something that you only heard on the streets from young black men.
Yeah.
Now you can hear it
on Meet the Press.
Yes, you know, you
may
hear
I just
press.
Jump in
so
here?
To separate black culture from American culture is ridiculous.
I have a very salient point that I would like to express. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Sure. You guys, we got two minutes left, so I'm about to go into a last one because we've got to end the show, but I'm going to let you guys finish off. Go ahead, Mr. Solution.
Thank you. And this is the point. This is the powerful point. There is no definition of what being black is.
If you sit
with a group of black people and you ask them, what is it that binds you? And you'll get just total silence because it's nothing. Except in most instances, it's confusion and complaining and a refusal to, face real issues, real world issues. But there is no such thing as black in America as is understood by many people who would identify themselves as black.
Mr. Freon, I'll let you get the last word, and we'll get out of here.
It is what it is. How do you separate it? You don't. The only thing that a group of black people might have in common is the way that they are treated by the dominant white culture, perhaps. Other than that, there will be no consensus. So to group together in generalizations is a waste of time.
Right.
I think people need to think for themselves on this issue. Of course, black culture has some nuances and some things that are exclusively or may be considered exclusively black, but that no longer even holds true. You know, it used to be that hip-hop music was a black cultural thing. Well, now hip-hop music is a worldwide culture. See, black culture has always affected all culture. Simply
that. And where there's no definition, there's only confusion.
There you go. I think you guys nailed it. Thank you. I appreciate it. We ended up having a great conversation after all of this.
Absolutely.
And Mr. Solution, thank you for joining us on the show. And thank you to Jay King for allowing me to come in and host. A wonderful time. So I will see you guys Monday. You know what time. And as I always say, radio is free, so we thank you for paying attention. Stick around. The Real Delia is coming up next right here on the J. King Network. Stick around. Don't you dare go anywhere. Oh, I promised I was going to play this song today. Hold on. Let me stop the music. Race. I can't even stop the music. Hold on. Let me stop the music here. I have to play this song. I used to play this song every Saturday when I used to get up in the morning. I want to share it with you. It's one of my favorite songs growing up. And I play it specifically on Saturday mornings. I know it's Sunday, but I got to play it. Anyway, The Real Deal, you're coming up next right here on the J. King Network. Here's De La Soul with Saturday.
Saturday.
Now is the time to act so cool tonight.
Hello, 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 everyone. This is the real Delia coming back to you for my second show, and we're going to try and make it a little bit more upbeat this week. This week we're talking about raising children in the 20th century and in the 21st century, both of which I have some experience with. So first of all, just to let you all know, some of you who don't know who I am. I am Delia Smith. I live in San Francisco. My work currently is as a cab driver, job that I've held for about 10 years, 2.5 years in my current company. And I've got a lot of experience in the transportation industry in San Francisco Bay Area, but I also have a lot of experience in other industries. So I'm coming to you from a place of a varied experience. And the way I got involved in talk radio is I've always been a fan of talk radio, and I've been a fan of the J. King Network for the past year. I listen to the Kings in the Morning regularly, some of the other shows on the network. Those of you who might be new, the J. King Network has Kings in the Morning, Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., hosted by J. King, Lynn Tolliver, Johnny Graham, Cracker Davis, and Robert Redwine. And it's just an uproarious good time. It's a great way to start off your morning. If you're in other time zones, Eastern time zone, it would be 11 o'clock, and Central, it would be 10 o'clock. And that's kind of the main show that's on Monday through Friday, five times a week, but there's also some of my other favorite shows. There's the Sabella Dell Show, just talking about love and romance, male-female relationships, Tuesday nights at 7 o'clock with my friend and pal, Sabella Dell. Also, we're just now following J. King The Way I See It, which today was hosted by Reese of Reese in the Radio, Reese on the Radio. And Jimmy Kent didn't make it today, but he's usually there also. Jimmy Kent, JFK, another friend from the East Coast. And I want to know, when I do get started talking about my subject, I'd love to have some call-ins from some female callers, some male callers, and find out what you all have to say about your experience or your observations of raising children. I'm a mother of two children. I had a son in 1980 who just celebrated his 33rd birthday on Friday, and I had a daughter in 1981. I also am a grandmother of one grandson each from my two children, and also two grandsons from my son's future wife. So I'm surrounded by children. I have children, grandchildren, godchildren. I'm involved with the children at my church. So I'm very much into kids. Right now, I see that I believe this is J. King calling in. So let me open his mic and see if that's him. I'm calling from 818-518.
Delia, I didn't call you. I'm just listening to your show. I'm sorry.
Okay, great. Well, I'm glad you listened to my show. Nothing to apologize for that. I'll put you back. All right. Okay, as I was saying about my experience, one thing I have in common with J. King, he and I are the same age, and he's got, I think, four kids in all. But I wanted to share y'all just something before I get too far along. I made reference to this last week, that when I was in high school, my mother was encouraging me to go into broadcasting, and she was thinking that I would be good as a weather girl or a news reporter, and I actually saw myself as the next Barbara Walters. And I made reference to something that's in the George Washington High School yearbook in 1979, and this is what I said. I plan to go to a university to study journalism and broadcasting. Someday, all Americans will be either reading my articles or listening to my commentary, thanks to my teachers and friends. That's the pertinent part of that. And it just amuses me to death when I think about that, because it seems like if I had done what I said I was going to do, I probably would have been Oprah Winfrey. So when I saw Oprah taking off at the early time in her career when she was in Color Purple and then she had her own TV show and my mother and I were just so excited about her. And I wonder sometimes if my mother was saying, see, that's supposed to be my daughter up there. But she was really turned on by Oprah Winfrey, and I was too. So to get into our topic, like I told you, I had two kids. I had my kids really young, in case anybody was doing the math. I actually had my son when I was 18 years old. And being a young mother, fortunately, I relied on my parents for support a great deal. And they were there for me all the time, you know, as most African-American parents, I think, are in that situation. But trying to raise my kids, one of the things I did is I tried to save them from the mistakes that I made. And I told them, you know, very honestly, different things as they came up. I remember my son asked me one time, why did I break up with his father? And I told him because he was a weak man. I didn't really explain exactly what I meant, but I told him that. When my son asked me if I had ever smoked weed, I was honest in my response to that question. He was somewhat surprised because, like most children, he put me up on a pedestal and he just did not imagine me doing any of the things that he didn't see me do with his own two eyes. My daughter, likewise, I did the same thing with her because, you know, I was raising my two kids together. I was a single mother for most of the time. But one thing that I always did is, you know, I took my kids to church. And, you know, like I say, my parents were very involved. I tried to have good people around them. I've heard a lot of conversation of late about whether or not a woman can raise a man to be a strong man. And, you know, a lot of people think that if you're a single mom raising a boy, your son is going to be wimpy or he's going to run over you and all these things. And I just think that that's just not true. But I do not want to make this show a soliloquy. I am capable of talking a great deal, but I'd like some conversation. My children, like I said, they were raised in the 80s. And I was raised in the 70s. When I was coming up in the 70s, I didn't have the kind of traumas that the kids have today. I was 16 years old the first time that I knew of a peer of mine dying in a violent manner. And the way that that happened was some of the girls from my high school, the cheerleaders, were going to a football game. And the girl that was driving was under the influence. And they had an accident, and one of the girls flew through the windshield and died, one of the cheerleaders. And that was the first time and the only time during the time I was growing up that I knew that somebody my age had died in a violent fashion. There were gangs when I was coming up, but mostly the gangs that I knew about were the Chinese gangs in San Francisco because the school I went to were predominantly Chinese. I didn't know anything about Crips or Bloods. There was no rap music yet. And I wasn't socialized with that type of behavior. And then when I bring my kids up, rap music was in its infancy, and Tupac came out, and you know, he was kind of rough and, you know, did some of the thug stuff. But Tupac was not that harsh when you consider, you know, what a lot of the gangster rap is nowadays. A lot of Tupac stuff I really like. So I didn't have problems with it. But and, of course, the music that I listened to when I was coming up was absolutely nothing like what we're listening to now. I'm so grateful, you know, those of you that were listening last week heard my interview with Joe Levy, and I'm going to try and play some more Jay Levy music later on. And, you know, the interview with him was great. The music he does, I just really love because he does music that has emotion and it's about something. And it's enjoyable, and it speaks to a person's heart. It's not something that is, you know, self-promoting, like, you know, look at me, I got this much money, I got this many hoes, I'll beat you down, and all the other stuff. It's not like that. But when I was bringing up my kids, all the gangster rap came up, all the media. It's really, really hard when you're raising your kids unless you completely live in a society or you get yourself into a community where they don't have access to media, which in turn would mean you don't have access to media, it's really hard to raise kids nowadays. And I really hate to say nowadays because that makes me sound even older than I like to think I am. Again, I raised two kids. We went to church. We participated in church activities. My daughter had an opportunity to go to an acting school one year. She had opportunity to participate in pageants. My son participated in sports. And we had a lot of extended family, godparents that was there for my kids. And that's the way it was, which was much the same as it was for me in the 70s, with the exception being that I was raised by two parents. And then after the 80s of me raising my kids and going through a lot of experiences that I wished I hadn't gone through, some things are probably my fault and some things are just things that happen in life. Then my daughter had my first grandson in 1998. He's 15 now. He just had a birthday fairly recently as well. And when she had him, again, there's another change. It seems like the hip-hop music is just all over the place, and the kids are glamorizing the messages that they get, and it's almost impossible. Kids are getting Facebook pages now, 8 and 9 years old. I was on Facebook the other day, and my youngest grandson, I think he's 7, he started chatting with me. It was adorable because he was chatting with me. But thank God that I think the only people he's friends with on Facebook are members of the family. But I just want to know, you know, how some of you are feeling about this. I'm looking in the chat room, and I'm not seeing any comments. I'm seeing hello and howdy, and that's great. I'm glad to see that you all are there. But I feel like I'm speaking into a vacuum a little bit. Call in. Call in to 347-205-9366. And in the meantime, I'm going to play some music from Karen White. This is Heaven from the Karen White Carpe Diem CD.
Oh,
Thinking about their own experiences, whether as parents or as children. Like I told you, I have two kids. My kids were 21 and a half months apart. So I like to tell a lot of people that my son has ESP. And the reason how come I know my son has ESP is because of something that happened on December 22nd, 1981. Now, what happened was when I was pregnant with my son, when I was pregnant with my daughter, my son was 15, 16, 17, 18 months, and so on. I told my son, you're a big boy. You can't sleep in the crib anymore because I'm going to have a baby. The crib is for the baby. So I took my son out, and I put him on a small couch next to the crib. So my son was sleeping next to the crib night after night for the last 4 or 5 months of my pregnancy. And on December 22nd, 1981, about 4 o'clock in the morning, I went into labor. And I was in labor, but it wasn't strong enough, so it wasn't time to go yet. And I was waiting for my mother to come pick me up and take me to the hospital. And at 7-something in the morning, my son got up, wiped his eyes, looked in an empty crib, and said, shut up, baby. He knew two things. He knew his sister was coming that day, and he also knew that she was going to be loud. So he hurried up and told her, shut up, before she even got here. That's just a little memory I wanted to share with you folks. And once again, when I was raising my children, my parents were very involved. They often took my kids back and forth to school and, you know, at least picked them up for me. One time, actually, we got our lines of communication crossed. And they thought I was picking up my son, and I thought they had picked him up, and nobody picked up my son for about an hour or so, because there was no cell phones in the early 80s. So I didn't get a phone call telling me, hey, where are you? Come get your child. I got home, called my mother, and she said, no, he's not over here. We thought you picked him up. And then I had to hurry up and go get him, and thankfully, because the daycare center knew who I was, and they knew that I did not do that on purpose. They did not call CPS. So I was able to retrieve my child without too much drama. But again, what I really want to talk about is the influence of media and some of the strategies and tactics that we have employed in raising our children from generation until generation. When I was coming up, my parents were deacon and deaconess of the church. We were at church every single Sunday, from Sunday school, morning worship, afternoon program, nighttime service, whatever was going on in the middle of the week. If somebody wanted to do something at church on Saturday, we were there. We were constantly in church. And it never, ever occurred to me the whole time I was growing up to say to my parents, I don't feel like going to church. That just wasn't going to happen. My mother, she was a strong woman, and when I say she was a strong woman, I don't just mean that she was a spiritually strong woman. I don't mean that her voice carried weight or that when she looked at me, I knew she was serious. I mean that I was afraid my mother would hurt me. Bless her soul, my mother's been gone since 1990, And I'm still afraid to do something that I would think that she would not be happy about, because I'm not 100% positive she won't come back and do something to me even now. But when I was raising my children, I found that my children did challenge me. That was the 20th century, the late 20th century. And my children, my son and my daughter both, they said things to me that I would have never dared to say to my mother. They acted in ways that were not becoming. And it was very hard on me. And I kept thinking, what is it? You know, you always hear people say, kids these days, I just don't understand them. And then when I had my kids, I would say, what is it with the kids these days? Why don't they act like I did? I remember my mother said to me, I hope one day your kids make you cry like you made me cry. And I said, that's not possible, because I wasn't that bad of a kid. But, you know, my kids made me get stressed out in new and exciting ways, things that I would have never thought of doing, my kids did. But, you know, fortunately, I got them both to adulthood. They had children of their own. They've gone into different careers of their own. Unfortunately, some of you already know my daughter's not with us anymore, but my daughter had a very good career up until shortly before her passing on. My son, he is now involved with a beautiful woman. They just celebrated their 3-year anniversary, and he's, you know, taking care of his son and taking care of his, I guess some people would say stepsons, but I just like to say they're his two smaller sons that just don't share our DNA. But they're beautiful young boys, and their mom is just absolutely great. But the difference that I see between me and my kids and their kids is really profound when I look at it. I see that when I was growing up, my mother took me shopping. Sometimes we would go shopping, for instance, if we were shopping for a new dress, and I would pull out a dress, you know, and I'd say, Mom, can I have this one? And she would look at it. She'd say, well, how much is it? I'd be like, I don't know. I don't know how much it is. What did I care how much it was? I wasn't paying for it. And so she would look at it, and she'd say, oh, we can't afford it. I didn't argue with my mother. I didn't give her any type of back talk. I wasn't there, because nobody was taking me away from her and putting me in foster care for her hitting me. I had never even heard of such a thing. So my mother said we couldn't afford it. It went back on the rack. I pulled out the next dress that wasn't as pretty and asked her about that one. And usually she would say, oh, we can't afford that one either. And I put it back. Usually I get about the third or the fourth dress. Never even occurred to me to pitch a fit, tell my mother, well, why? I just want this dress. Never would occur to me. Absolutely not. But when my kids came along, they had to have Nikes. They had to have certain types of jeans. And I would really get into it with my kids, because they did not understand that I wasn't always able to do that stuff. Fortunately, for a lot of the time, my mother was around, and she maintained a credit account just so she could go shopping and get my kids whatever I was coming up short on. So that was a blessing. You know, and my father was the same way after my mother passed on. He would do anything at all for my kids. But nowadays, a lot of kids don't have the extended family. And unfortunately, in some cases, some kids are being raised by the extended family. As I already shared, due to my daughter's passing at the age of 28 with a 12-year-old son, I'm now raising my 15-year-old grandson. He's a 21st century kid, he likes to tell me. And with the 21st century kids, they're even more materialistic and worldly than the younger kids. I remember my son asked me when he was about 6 years old, how are babies born? And I didn't understand the question. I thought that he was asking me, how was he created? And I started explaining to him how it was that when a man and a woman love each other, they express their love in physical ways. And he said, what do you mean by that? So I said, hugging and kissing and stuff, because I was really kind of embarrassed. And he said, well, I know how I got in your stomach. I just wanted to understand, how did I get out? And it was really embarrassing. I did a sweeping motion that went from my neck to right between my legs, just kind of went like that. And he was like, oh, okay. And then a few minutes later, he looked at me and he said, you and Daddy used to love each other? And I was like, yeah, we did. Because my son did not remember me and his father being together as a couple. It was kind of sad, but that's what was going on. And so my daughter, she gave birth to my first grandson in February 98. And like I said, he's 15 now, and I'm raising him. And unfortunately, his father's not too much in the picture. He's got two grandfathers. They're not in the picture as strongly as my father was with my father, and my parents were with my kids. I have to call them. If I don't call them, you know, and tell them what's going on, they don't know. They don't remember to call me. It feels like I'm kind of alone sometimes in this situation. But I'm constantly trying to expose my grandson to good people because I believe it really does take a village to raise a child. And sometimes you got to call the village and tell them you need their help. You got to call them, text them, whatever it is. But I'm finding that I'm relying more on friends than I ever did in trying to raise my grandson. There's the coaches, and there's the teacher, and there's the pastor. There's always the pastor. Thanks be to God for that. And those are our resources, you know. But the thing is, when I was raising my daughter and my son together, the day came, and this was really sad for me, and it's going to be hard for me to talk about it, but the day came when my daughter somewhat turned on me. She was starting to do things, and she didn't want to follow my rules. And she told a lie on me at school because she had cut school, and when she returned to school the next day, the teacher asked her about it. She cut the whole day of school. And when the teacher asked her what happened, she said, my mother beat me and choked me. And the teacher called me and said, I don't really believe this, but I have to make a report. And I said, okay, well, I understand. So the teacher made the report because they're mandatory reporters. The next thing that happened, a while after that, my daughter ran away from home. She was gone for 2 weeks, and she called me. And this is when we just started having three-way phones, you know, the ability to make a three-way call. I'm talking to my daughter. I said, where are you? She actually told me the address where she was. So I went on the other line and called the police and told them where she was, and they went to pick her up, and I just stayed on the phone talking to her. When the police got there, she yelled, I hate you, and hung up the phone. I thought the police were going to bring my daughter back home to me. If I had known what was going to happen next, I would not have called them for help. But what happened was when my daughter went with the police, they took her to a place in San Francisco. It's, I guess, part of the social service system called Huckleberry House. They took her there and had her talk to a counselor. And she told the counselor something that caused my daughter not to be returned to my house. She was taken to foster care. And from there, she ended up in a group home, and from there, she ended up in juvenile. It was a total of 2 years my daughter was out of my house. And during that time, when the system had control of my child and they were making me pay for this, during that time, I was still there for my daughter in every way I had to be. I showed up at all the places that they took her to for all the visits that they allowed me to have. I paid the money I was required to pay. I even actually spent money I wasn't supposed to spend on behalf of my daughter at times. But when I got my daughter back after her being out of my house for 2 years, it was like the person I got back wasn't my daughter. You know, I mean, she looked like me, except for she had dyed her hair. She had some tattoos, and she had some new homes, and she had some different attitude because she'd been exposed to a lot of things. And I know that the system was supposed to be solving the problem in my family, but the problem in my family didn't get worse until the system stepped in. We were doing just fine, my parents and I, but it didn't work out. Once the system got in, I think that they really messed up my daughter's life. And now I'm kind of facing the same battle because since the death of my daughter, I have my grandson. I'm trying to keep him out of the system, but we're somewhat in the system. I have what's called probate custody guardianship of him. And because of that, because my daughter fought the custody prior to her death, because she fought the custody, it was hard for me to get guardianship of my grandson. I got him, though, but I'm under court supervision. We got all kinds of lawyers and social workers, and everybody's looking at us. And I really believe that I am a good enough person, and I love my grandson enough, and I'll do anything for him. Everybody that knows me knows that. But the way society is set up right now, they really won't let me just do it because they're going to go in and try to make sure that I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. It's a challenge. It's a challenge. He sees everything. I can't protect him from anything. He's got a laptop, you know. He's got internet access on his phone. And the kids are just growing up too fast now. He talks to me like I'm the crazy person. One of the most funniest things that he ever said to me, though, was he told me that I don't understand because I'm from the 20th century and he's a 21st century kid. And I thought that was hilarious. The reason being because my daughter used to tell me that I was stuck in the 70s. And I thought that made sense. She said, "You're stuck in the 70s. I said, "Well, what's wrong with that? The 70s was a good time. The music was good. People knew how to act. People weren't shooting each other over nothing. But now I'm being told that he's from the 21st century and I'm from the 20th century. That's not really true, but that's what he thinks. I told him, I said, "Well, I'm not 100 years older than you, so this is crazy." But to his credit, and probably partially because of the influence of my father and other great men that we have known, my grandson has also said some very sweet and kind things to me. But it's hard, you know. Truthfully, it's hard. I want to play right now Mama's Song featuring Shirley Murdoch. Everybody have a listen.
You know what, y'all? I couldn't finish my CD without putting this song on here. But I don't know if it's so much a song as it is a testimony. You see, this is called Mama's Song. And this is dedicated to everybody out there who may be just like me. Your mama's gone on to be with Jesus. Now, if your mama's still living, I want you to do old Big Rob a favor. Give her flowers while she's still here, y'all. Because when she's laying in that casket, you can do all the crying you want, but she ain't going to be able to hear you. Now travel with me in your mind to back in the day, y'all. And it would be early on a Sunday morning. While everybody else in the house was still asleep, Mama would be up with the chickens and with the sun coming up, y'all. And she'd be in that kitchen. She'd be frying bacon, scrambling eggs, cooking up some country ham, making homemade biscuits from scratch, y'all. And Mama always made a big old pot of grits. She'd be standing over the top of that stove, stirring them grits. She'd just be laughing and talking and hollering out. And then she'd get to moaning. She'd just get to moaning like this, y'all. And then when the Holy Spirit really got into her, she starts singing. She'd say something like this. She'd say,
beside me. y'all, I don't even think that mama ate breakfast on most Sunday mornings. Like most mamas, they spend more time cooking for the family than they do actually enjoying the food that they cook. Because while we would be eating breakfast, mama would be in the back, getting on her favorite church dress, and she'd pull out that old hat box, pull out her favorite Sunday hat, y'all, spray a little of that perfume on herself, and mama would rush out there and say, come on, y'all, we got to go. She'd look at my daddy, look at us, say, we got to go. And we'd rush off and hop in that old station wagon with that wood paneling on the side. And while he's going down on the way to the church, my big brother be trying to help me fix my little clip-on tie. And then we would arrive at the church house. And the big kids, they'd go to Sunday school. But since I was the baby, mama would take me up into the sanctuary with her. And she'd be so excited when Sister Shirley Murdoch was on the program. You know, she'd just say, I hope she's going to sing my favorite song. And mama's favorite song went like this.
Life is too short to be walking around mad at one another.
Never made no sense to you. But now that you got children of your own and now that you're older, it makes all the sense in the world. I think that's all mama was trying to do is just look out for us, y'all. Listen, every time you get the opportunity to show your mama some love, make sure you do it, big baby. Because tomorrow's not promised for none of us. This has been a message from your boy, Big Rob. God bless you all.
All right, everybody. So what I'd like to hear about in the chat room or call in is, do you think that social services are too involved nowadays? Because like I said, they took some information about something that had happened to my daughter that was not contemporaneously happening, and they used that as a reason why they removed her from my house, sent me on a two-year trip through hell, made deductions from my paycheck that made it hard for me to take care of the child that was at home with me. And now, you know, I have to always worry about whether or not social services will become involved in my life in that way again. I'd love to have a caller call in and let me know what you think about it. If you've had any experiences with social services or with the juvenile justice system or with the guardianship court system, because this is something that's on my mind a lot. It's something I live with every day. I'm raising my grandson. I know I do the right thing about him because I love him more than I love myself. So I know I couldn't possibly be treating the child wrong. I've been there ever since the moment he was born, actually before that. But social services, in my humble opinion, from my own personal experience, they seem to be doing a disservice when they say that they're supposed to be doing a service. And you know, like I said, I believe that they made my daughter's life harder than it would have been had they not been involved. So what do you all think? Somebody call in and tell me. While you're thinking about that, we're going to listen to some Joe Levy, My Little Ones. This is a song that really touches my heart. It kind of reminds me of when my kids were small, I used to sit down with my journal and write little poems for them. And I'm not a poet. My daughter was a poet. My son can write raps. I'm not a poet. But I used to write little poetry. I have no idea where that journal is. But I used to just write how I felt about my kids, just hoping that maybe one day they would read it and know how much they are truly loved. So this, I think, is Joe Levy's poem to his sons and daughters.
This is our moment. This is our star. The very first time I can hold you in my arms. I see you smiling, looking at me as if you know the kind of father I will be. Baby, I don't have a lot right now. My promise to you, baby, every sacrifice and move I make, I'll do it all for you. I'll be your best friend and biggest fan. I need you to always love your mother. Baby boy, baby boy,
I love you so.
I love you so.
I'm gonna be here for
I'm
you.
I'm gonna be here guiding
to
you.
Help you.
Yeah, grow. Yeah.
No matter what.
No matter what comes your way.
Come on, let's go.
No matter what goes.
Don't you ever worry.
Don't you ever worry, my little one. You're my little lady. My future queen, oh yes, and I won't allow anyone to hurt you, baby. As long as I can breathe, I want to go out and conquer the world. And no matter where you go, what you do, we'll always be daddy's girl. Stop you, babe.
I'm gonna
be supporting you.
To help.
Yeah.
No matter what
the problem is.
Come on,
troublemaker.
Don't you ever worry,
my little one. I'm gonna raise you the right way so you can make it on your own. 'Cause I won't.
My love, there's no stress
but daddy's gonna be around for a long, long, long time, yeah. I'll take care of all the problems, child. Daddy's gonna be around to make you smile. Your daddy's gonna be around for a long, long time.
Well, hello, everybody, again. I hope you all enjoyed that. That's one of my favorite songs from Joe Levy's album. And that album is available at joelevy.com. And in case you were listening to the lyrics, he said, no matter what the problem is, your daddy's going to be around for a long, long time. And I think that's the challenge that all of us parents have, to rise to whatever the problem is, whether it's raising our kids in the 20th century, which I already did, and now raising our kids in the 21st century, my current challenge. And, you know, you just can't let the social service system, the media, the gang, the popos, as the kids say nowadays, you just can't let them take your kids from you. You got to do what you got to do. It's challenging. The show right before me was supposed to be about whether or not we are too busy being black to be American. That's what I thought it was about. It went off in another area. But as an African-American woman in the Bay Area, San Francisco, California, in the United States here in this 21st century, I know that there's a lot of challenges with raising kids, but you just can't let society, the social service system, and the powers that be overrule what you got to do about the people in your house. That's my main message today. And I know that it's been a soliloquy today, which is not my wishes, and it's still not too late for you to call in. It's 4:48 by my time, and in a little while, 5G sports will be coming up. After that, Laker girl. And so before I have to give up the mic to the other hosts, I would like to hear from some of you all about what your experiences were like, what you think about the topic, and anything that you want to tell me about that is relevant to what we're talking about today, the experiences of raising kids in these here United States, in this current culture that we have to deal with, whether or not you think that the social service system, the courts, the teachers, the fact that if you're raising an African-American child and if you don't have the money to send your child to a private school and you have to send them to a public school and you don't live in a very affluent community, you might be sending your child to a school that's not going to prepare them as well as some of the Caucasian, Asian, and maybe even Hispanic children have the opportunity to get. There's a lot of things to think about when you're raising your children, and you have to think about it all the time. I think that's why a lot of us have insomnia, because we try to go to bed at night and we worry about what is going to become of our little ones, of our precious children that we brought home from the hospital, the little bundles of joy. Once you take them home, you get confronted with all kinds of things. It's not just physical illness to worry about. There's mental illness, and there's an awful lot of societal illness. So I wonder what you all think about that. I really don't like the fact that nobody's calling in, but I hope you all are listening to me, and I hope that I'm reaching you on some sort of level. You can reach me on Facebook. I'm over there at facebook.com/DeliaLS1, which is my first name, Delia, my middle initial, my last name initial, and a one. And you'll recognize me because it's the same picture that's up for the Real Delia Show currently. I've had a really great time talking to everybody. It's Sunday afternoon here in San Francisco. I missed out on an hour of sleep last night. I've been thinking about this topic and trying to put it all together to let everybody know what I think and to see what you all think. So somebody's beeping in my phone, but that's not regarding the show. I want to play some more music, and right now, let's have a little bit of love from the OJs. Well, hello, everybody. We're almost to the end of our show, but I just want to let you all know that 5G Sports is coming up right after us. I've enjoyed talking to you all. I hope that you've enjoyed listening to some of my little anecdotes of what it was like raising my kids and confunction. Thank you, Valsie. Like I said to Valsine in the chat room, I introduced it as the OJs, and that's another song, the OJs Love Train, but that's Confunction, and I do love Confunction, and my brain was in a fog. I couldn't think about who it was, so, yeah, that was Confunction Love Train, a Bay Area group from California that I really love. They did a show up in Thunder Valley Casino last month that I wanted to go to, and I couldn't make it. I think they were, no, not that one. That was J. King and the Club Nouveau and Barcase. I'm going to leave the music to the music professionals. I'm just going to be me, Delia, the lady cab driver, the mother, grandmother, student of life. And I hope that you all can come right back with me next week when we'll be talking about a new topic, and I can't tell you what it is because I don't know. But when I figure it out, I will post it on my Facebook. I will post it on Blog Talk. So hopefully you all will stick with me as I continue to grow. We are in 2013. It is March 10th. There's so much more of this year to go, 8.5 more months to be precise. And I got big goals, and this is just one of my things that I've been wanting to do. And I'm glad that I'm doing it today, and I'm looking forward to doing more in the future. Before I sign out, I got to let everybody know that J. King Network is the bomb. Tolliver, Lynn Tolliver is a real professional, and we're going to sign off on one more song. We're going to listen to one of the favorites of the J. King Network, Mark Knox, I Want Your Love. Because isn't that what we all want, people? We all want love. And as soon as I said that, I lost it, but we're almost there.
I want your love. The first time I realized, when I looked in your eyes,